Welcome to a module from the Higher Order Therapy course from the Association for Psychological Therapies. Like the title suggests, the course examines the most effective factors in therapy: engaging the patient, making an assessment, analyzing the information you obtain, and helping your patients identify and achieve their goals using all the most important ideas from the leading psychological therapies. You can, one by one, take every module in the course, or just the ones that you want to supplement your current level of knowledge and skill. If you do the first, then you will gain Level 1 accreditation in Higher Order Therapy from the APT, and you'll be eligible to sit the exam, which would give you Level 2 accreditation. If you do the second, then you'll simply be a better therapist. Each module represents 1 hour CPD, with most talks lasting between 15 and 25 minutes. Then there are usually one or two exercises or resources to prompt you to apply the learning straight away. We hope you enjoy this module of the course. Here's the course author, Dr. William Davies.
Hello, and welcome to the APT's session on planning, helping the patient to construct a plan to achieve their goals. This section is about another of the exciting bits, constructing the plan that will help the patient. Oddly enough, this is the Cinderella of all the therapeutic skills, I think, in that it doesn't get half of the attention it deserves. Which is strange, because it's fun and exciting to do, and it's vitally important. If you don't construct a good plan, then you run the risk of doing lots of random therapeutic-type activity. If you do the planning, on the other hand, you sometimes need to do nothing else. Patients can recognise a good plan when they see one, and don't always want you to sit by them while they carry it out. But often they do. As we discussed on the module about case formulation, if you were there, if you've got a good, clear idea of what the patient's goals are, then often enough ideas occur to you as to how to help them achieve those goals. Equally, if you have worked out what is perpetuating the patient's problem, what is sustaining it, then you may have ideas as to how to undermine those factors that are working against the patient's interests. And the same, if you can see what positives the patient has in their life, you'll probably want to work on developing those positives so they gradually displace the negatives they have working against them. So those three things, the patient's goals, the factors that are helping to perpetuate the patient's problems, and the positives they have in their life, are all rock-solid guides to forming a plan for helping the patient. So your ideas on those things, that will be the plan. You and the patient simply write down the ideas that you produce in relation to these, have a look at what you have written and whether it can be refined at all, and that can form a very good plan indeed. All you then have to do with the patient is to act on that plan. Only one small point, which is this. Therapy is generally a collaborative enterprise, so you and the patient will be working together on developing the plan of action. And most therapists are good at this. They're good at giving the patient a voice and taking notice of what the patient says. But we do just need to remember the nature of collaboration, though. In other words, that both of us have to be happy with the plan. So we need to be sure that we're happy with it too, that it is as good a plan as we're capable of producing together with the patient. The patient being happy with it isn't sufficient. It's a collaboration, as the two of us have to be happy. So there we are. So long as you can identify the patient's goals, the factors that are helping to perpetuate the patient's problems and the positives they have in their life, then you can probably construct a good plan to help the patient. But don't go away just yet, because we haven't really started. In your resources, you will find a picture of a ladder. And this is what's going to be the basis of this session. In fact, I'll try and put at least two ladder pictures there, one for you to use for your patient, and at least one filled in as an example. So if you're at your desk, you can have a pen poised, ready to fill in the blank one. If not, then just enjoy the audio and fill it in when you get the chance. I think you'll be constructing great plans for your patients, and maybe even for yourself. It's difficult to resist. I have to tell you that the ladder is the greatest therapeutic tool ever invented. I can say that because I don't think I actually invented it. I think I got the idea from somebody I can't remember ages ago, but I don't see it about except in things that I've written. Anyway, it's a great idea, and thanks to whoever did think of it, because it joins together two of the most important parts of the brain. Because what you write at the top of the ladder is what the patient wants. And what you write on the rungs of the ladder are the logical steps the patient has to take to get what they want. So at the top of the ladder, you have the emotional, motivating part of the brain, having its say. And in the steps of the ladder, you have the logical, executive part of the brain doing its stuff. So one simple picture integrates both parts and motivates the patient to do the logical things necessary for their success, which I think is very, very neat. So the first implication of this is that you have to be sure that what you or the patient write at the top of the ladder is actually what the patient really wants. So not what you want for the patient or I want for the patient, not what the patient thinks they ought to want or what they think might please us or what their goal should be, but what they really, really want. The second implication is that when you write down what the patient wants, it has to be a nice gripping account of what they want. So if you're seeing someone who is depressed and they tell you that their goal is to be not depressed, and you simply write at the top of the ladder, to be not depressed, that's not exciting enough. It doesn't speak to the emotional part of the brain. And it's not easy enough to plan for. It's not going to get the patient motivated as much as they might be. But maybe you did some good work in the assessment phase. I'm sure you did do. And the case formulation phase in getting from the patient just how they would want life to be. So maybe you will be able to write, instead of to be not depressed, you'll be able to write, to wake up in the morning feeling refreshed, to lead a life that is rewarding, to feel as though I've got a good amount of energy and vitality, to get on with people around me, and generally to think I'm reasonably happy. Now that is a very clear picture of something that could motivate somebody. Not always, though, because plenty of depressed people are so depressed some of the time that they simply wouldn't be able to get latched into something like that. But even those people are not like that all the time. And your best chance with severely ill people is to work with them when they are at their best, when they are least ill, because this is when they're most receptive to therapy. So if you're working with them when they're at their best, you're working to prevent relapse. And if you prevent relapse for a patient, then they are just as cured as if you started work with them when they were at their lowest point. I think that when we're working with severely mentally ill people, the best thing we can do with them when they're at their least receptive, at their lowest point, is to keep them safe and to look after them. Then when they go through the part of the cycle, and it normally is a cycle, when you go through the part of the cycle when they are more receptive, then to make sure we are really there and we do our best to make good progress. Preventing relapse is a really good form of cure. But then again, plenty of the people we work with are not necessarily that ill, and they are perfectly receptive and perfectly able to appreciate the kind of picture we just wrote down together with them. In fact, they can be excited by it, and that's what we want. That's the point of it, to really motivate them as much as we possibly can. So supposing you're working with somebody who deliberately harms themselves, what do you think you might agree on with the patient to write at the top of the ladder? Well, this is where you'll probably incorporate what you found out about the function of the self-harm with what you find out about their goals or aspirations. For example, you might have found out that the function of the self-harm is to deal with the agitation or distress, and that their aim was to stop self-harming. So you might agree together to write something like, to stop harming myself and instead to find a better way of dealing with agitation and distress. A way that works just as well, but doesn't have the drawbacks. Agreeing on a double-edged vision like this is often a good way forward. For example, if somebody comes to see you wanting to get rid of their irritability, which is something that can really wreck a person's life, then you might agree on a vision along the following lines. Not to be so irritable. Instead, to accept people for who they are and to be pleased to have people around me. Depends on the nature of their irritability, but that kind of thing. Sometimes it is difficult to find such a double-edged vision. For example, if somebody wants to get rid of their panic attacks, which are horrendous, horrifying things, then there is little more to write than to get rid of the panic attacks at the top of the ladder. Don't worry, though, because the prospect of achieving that for somebody who is having panic attacks is exciting enough. And even with panic attacks, which tend to be associated with agoraphobia, because the patient doesn't want to leave the safety of home, you might agree on a vision such as to get rid of the panic attacks, to go through life with a reasonable degree of calmness, and to be able to go wherever I want, by myself or with others, just as I please. And that kind of vision at the top of the ladder will be very exciting for such a person. I think vision, as a word for what patients want, is very good because it is an emotional, motivating word. I'm not so sure about the word goal, because even though we often use it, because that sounds a bit colder and a bit more logical to me, and therefore not so motivating, not quite talking to the right part of the brain for motivating people. Remember, what you want at the top of the ladder is the emotional, motivating stuff. The logical steps come, as you might expect, in the steps of the ladder. Working out what motivates people, or what would motivate them, also works very well if you're working with forensic clients. For instance, one young man of about 28 I worked with had a history of fire setting, arson, getting into fights, and various other misdemeanours, which meant that he spent most of his time in secure environments, either in prison or special hospital. And I was working with him in another locked facility. Young men like this don't necessarily have lots of motivation to stop getting into fights and to stop setting fires. They wouldn't necessarily be something that would really motivate them when you write it down at the top of the ladder. Interestingly, though, when I was doing the assessment and asked him how he would like his life to turn out if he were to start with a blank sheet of paper, he said, without hesitation, that he wanted to be a gardener. And the interesting thing was that he knew lots and lots about gardening. He listened to all the radio programs about gardening and watched gardening programs on television if he got the chance, and completely unconnected, he also wanted to have a bicycle. He also wanted to learn how to play chess. So those three things were terrific things to write or draw at the top of the ladder. It's writing, actually, in his case. Very, very motivating for him. Excellent things, too, because one of the logical steps, if he has achieved what he wanted, was to stop setting fires to people's property and to stop getting into fights. And sure enough, he did really well. The local authority, the local council, took him on in their gardens department, eventually. So he would be cycling off from our secure facility on his bicycle on day leave from the Home Office to put in a good day's work. And he learned to play chess, and we had one or two good games. I actually bumped into him, funnily enough, in an open facility many months after he was discharged from where we had been working together in the locked facility. And it was like meeting up with an old friend. He'd done so well. It was delightful. Anyway, the point is that creating a positive vision doesn't just work for people with pure mental health problems. It works in the forensic world very well indeed, with behavioural problems, as you might say. It also works for people who can't really express themselves very well because they have intellectual difficulties, for instance. Often enough, in these cases, you're working with colleagues and you're working as a patient's advocate or representative or whatever word we want to use. In other words, we're trying to put yourself in their shoes and decide what they would really want and then work out what would be the logical steps for them to achieve that. And it works just as well, just the same way. Incidentally, as I said, what you write at the top of the ladder doesn't have to be words. It can equally well be drawings. And they don't even have to be especially good drawings, I can absolutely assure you. Either way, you then have something that can guide and inspire both you and the patient. So I suggest you give that a go as soon as you can. If you haven't got your resources in front of you, then maybe think of yourself or maybe a loved one and think what you would put at the top of the ladder. What would be a motivating vision to put there for you or the loved one you're thinking of? No need to worry about the steps just now. If you can get a really motivating vision up the top, that's half the battle. When you get back to your resources, or now if you are already there, bring to mind your trickiest patient and have a think what vision you might be able to agree on with them. One that would really motivate them and excite them. And when you've done that, maybe try it for a couple more patients. So the vision we've got at the top of the ladder will motivate the patient to tackle the logical steps, which can sometimes be demanding. And equally, sometimes they are not really very demanding at all. It's just a matter of working out what the steps are and taking them. So, what might the rungs of the ladder look like? Let's look first at a depressed person and see what sort of rungs they might have. We can't say exactly, of course, because the whole point of doing the assessment and working out the case formulation is that different people will need to take different steps. So it depends on the person. Even so, there is no reason why we shouldn't look at the sort of things that might be their vision at the top of the ladder and the rungs necessary. They might aim to wake up refreshed. So we're going to have to look at the factors that will help them sleep better. So one of the rungs might be to learn to sleep better. Although poor sleep is often cited as a symptom of depression, there's an element of chicken and egg here because while depression may partly cause poor sleep may also result in depressed energy levels and depressed moods. Another of the goals, or the top of the ladder, may be to lead a reasonably rewarding life. So for the rungs of the ladder, we will be talking to them about how they spend their day, their job, or how they occupy themselves. And this might be quite a radical thing to look at. Maybe they are in a job that really doesn't suit them, or spending their time occupying themselves with something that really doesn't suit them, in which case we might well want to support them in changing what they do. In fact, you have to be careful about this because when a person is depressed, they tend to view everything in a depressed kind of way. So it may be that their occupation is a problem, or it may be that they are in an occupation that suits them very well as any occupation could do, and yet they may still look at it in a negative light. So we're going to phrase things carefully. So another rung might be have a suitable occupation, which sort of leaves open the possibility that their current occupation is already a good one. And then they may say they want to sort their relationships out, to have some good relationships in their lives. So we need to examine that quite closely. And depending on what we find or what we found in the assessment, our rungs might be labelled to find a suitable partner, to make friends with some of the neighbours, to patch up the quarrel with my brother, to make friends at work, or whatever it would be. Could be several of those, more than one of them. And you will soon have some relevant, helpful rungs on the ladder nicely in place. and this will form the basis for subsequent sessions. Or if the patient feels able to tackle things on their own or with the help of a friend, they can do that. After all, you will normally have constructed this ladder with them, or at least shared it and agreed it with them, even if you constructed it in between sessions. So they will know exactly what needs to be done. Incidentally, you might notice that we haven't phrased the rungs of the ladder quite so inspirationally as we phrased the top of the ladder. And I think that's correct. The vision at the top does need to be phrased as inspirational as possible because it has to fire up the motivating part of the brain. It has to generate the whole process of motivation. But it makes sense to have the rungs of the ladder in straightforward down-to-earth language because here we are talking to the logical down-to-earth parts of the brain, and that's the kind of language it likes. Finally, with this example, you may feel that most of the steps we are looking at aren't very psychological. They're sort of common sense. And so they are. And indeed, most of our interventions will come from one of four headings. Biological interventions, which are very commonsensical. Behavioural ones, what a person spends their time doing, equally. Their relationships and their general environment. And finally, their thinking style, which can be a bit more psychological. I think it's nice also to have rungs on the ladder that the person has already achieved. In this case, there might be rungs such as get healthy, take exercise, find interesting things to do in my spare time, keep on good terms with my parents, make enough money to live comfortably. If the patient has achieved all of those, then they will already be halfway up the ladder. The bottom half a dozen rungs will be labelled with those things they've already achieved, and it's the remaining few rungs they need to climb. I think this is important from the point of view of building the person's self-efficacy, their feelings of effectiveness and powerfulness. And it gives a perspective on where they are, not starting at the bottom of the ladder, but having already achieved all sorts of things. The ladder is a very nice metaphor. The other front-running metaphor, I think, is the jigsaw puzzle, where some of the pieces are in place, but some pieces still need to be fixed. Even so, I think the ladder is a better one because it has the vision of what you want at the top and the logical steps needed to get there as the rungs. So it links up the motivating part of the brain with the objective logical part of the brain. In a way, the jigsaw metaphor doesn't really do quite so well, I don't think. You could, of course, say that the jigsaw gives what the completed picture will look like and many of the pieces are in place, as just the last few remaining ones need to be put in. But for me, the ladder works better, and in doing the planning, it's much easier to draw. Incidentally, I imagine there may be people who prefer a form that is more formal than the ladder. So I've produced one that covers pretty much the same ground as the ladder, but doesn't mention ladders and looks much more like an ordinary form. I'll leave it in your resources so you can see which you prefer, or ask your patient which one they prefer, or make a guess as to which one you think a particular patient will prefer. So there we are. That is planning. So if you can engage with the person, do a good assessment, see what function there is, if any, to the problem behaviour or the problem. Do a good case formulation and fill in an inspiring and logical ladder, then you are doing really good things. Of course, you might say you don't know quite what to put on the rungs because we haven't covered many interventions yet. But that's okay, because we will do in later modules if you want to take them. And in the meantime, don't fight shy of good, straightforward, common sense measures, because that's what most friends and relatives use to prevent their loved ones ever needing to come and see us in the first place. And they work very well. So that's planning. Remember, this is down as an hour's CPD, and yet the talk only lasts 20 or 30 minutes or whatever it is. So the rest of the time is for you to look at least one of your patients and work out how you're going to help them produce a good plan to achieve their goals or overcome their problems. But I hope you'll spend much more time than the remaining 30 minutes or so. I hope you'll find it so appealing that you use it forever, for your patients, for yourself, for whatever. If you want to study other modules, then I suggest the ones we have just mentioned, which are engaging with the patient, assessment, functional analysis, case formulation, but most of all, whichever you think are best for you. There's a nice one upcoming, actually, about structuring the therapy session and making happen these great things we plan. But whichever you think are best for you. Normally I say maybe not to study more than one module a day, so you have a chance to assimilate each one. But I think even if you did one a week and work at assimilating each one over the week, that would work out really well. Over a year, you would study and assimilate 50 modules, and that would be really something. In terms of resources, like I said, I'm going to leave a ladder filled in as an example and a blank ladder for you to use and a form that covers the same ground as the ladder but in a more form-like way, just in case you come across people who like things done formally. And I hope they all serve as a reminder of what we've been talking about. And one last thing. The question I'm most asked when I'm teaching is, what if the patient says something totally unrealistic for the top of the ladder? And my answer is always the same. I can remember an American guy, what he really wanted was to be president of the United States. A pretty unrealistic aspiration, isn't it? Especially if your actual job is being an actor and you're not an especially good actor. But you probably know his name, don't you? It was Ronald Reagan. He was US president for 8 years, 2 terms. He got elected once and again. So I always think we need to be cautious before we feel that anyone's aspirations are unrealistic. So there we are. Bye for now, and thanks for listening.
We hope you enjoyed and will benefit from this module of the Higher Order Therapy course. You'll find a transcript of the audio, any exercises or resources, and the list of all the course modules in the resources area of the online classroom. You can print all of those out if you wish and develop a relevant and attractive manual for yourself. One of the great things about distance learning like this is you can assimilate each module thoroughly before moving on to the next one. For this reason, we suggest you listen to just one module per week, then concentrate on assimilating it before the next one a week later. There's often plenty to practice. It also means you can look forward to a module at a regular time, say every Friday afternoon or every Tuesday traveling to work, or just whenever you like. You'll find a current list of all the available modules in the resources for this one, and if in due course you find you have studied them all, you can contact the APT to learn how to take the assessment for Level 2 accreditation.